Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today our guest is the one, the only Peter Lowe, partner and employment attorney for Braun and Isaacson. Peter, welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dave.
Yeah, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff today. And one of them that we're definitely going to talk about is this whole recording that's happening out there in the world. You know, surveillance, you might call it, on both sides, employee surveillance, employer surveillance. It's just going to be an interesting topic today.
I think we all maybe just followed the recent incident where some high-profile employee in the White House got terminated, and in perhaps the most secure room in what probably should be the most secure building in at least in the United States, there was a recorded conversation of her termination. And I'm talking, of course, about Omarosa.
Omarosa.
And she somewhat famously now taped her termination conversation with General Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was somewhat fascinated, just as an employment attorney, to read the transcript, or you can hear the tape. It's been released, as I think we all know. And, of course, I critique it, first of all, from the employment lawyer perspective and assess how that message was communicated, and a little bit off the topic of recording. But shameless plug for employment lawyers for a second. But the time to speak to us is before the termination conversation.
Absolutely.
I had a client call me, and they called and said, well, we've just terminated the employee at 9 a.m. this morning. Now we want to talk to you, about the what's happening in the wake of that. And, I didn't say it to them, but I'm shaking my head thinking it would have been so much better if you had called at 8:30 in the morning.
Because prior to the termination.
It's the most tricky of conversations. I don't mean to sound critical, but it's so critical what is said, which segues to, the issue of taping, because if an employee decides to tape the conversation and you as the manager or the HR person have not handled that conversation well or said things that are at best injudicious and at worst illegal, there is a living, breathing transcript of your conversation. And these little black devices that we all carry now, we know that it's incredibly easy. Even I could figure out how to tape a conversation.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, means really easy.
So it's something that I've been talking to employers about, both the risks of a conversation being taped and perhaps what they might be able to do in order to at least mitigate that risk, if not completely get rid of it, which is not practical.
Well, whether a state is a one-party listen state or a two-party listen state, meaning that one person has to approve of the conversation or two people have to approve of the conversation. I guess let's start at the basic premise here. Mm-hmm. If somebody records you and you're in a state where both parties have to agree to it, right? Locally, we'd say New Hampshire is a two-party state. Massachusetts is a two-party state. And you record somebody against them, are they well against any knowledge of that? What are the repercussions of that? Let's just start with that basic premise. What's the real repercussions of that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. In the two-party consent states, as you just indicated, both parties to the conversation have to have knowledge and then consent to the taping of the conversation. That's why when you call to place an order with a company, they'll have that recorded message saying this conversation may be taped for quality purposes. And if you continue and place your order or talk to the rep you've given consent to that taping, and you always have the choice to hang up, and therefore you won't be taped. That's how companies deal with that. If I tape you in a conversation in a two-party consent state, or in fact, if I'm say I'm located in California or I'm calling you in Maine, you get into some tricky issues whether the Maine
Absolutely.
Law or California law applies. But putting that aside, you could bring a claim against me for a violation of that state statute that says it must be two-party consent. Those claims are not commonplace, and probably why they're not commonplace is there's not really, in most cases, a lot of damages to be obtained. You might get a court to order you not to do it again, that it was illegal, that your rights were violated. But most of those statutes, and I'm kind of giving a broad brush because each state deals with this differently, they don't have an awful lot of teeth to the statute. Now, putting that aside, if you do it as an employer, as a business, as an organization, you're certainly going to get a very black eye because, you know, the notion is that you're doing something sneaky, surveillance, you're violating the law. And so the perception, the public relations, those other aspects can be more damaging. You know, the most famous recording of all was, well, I don't know if it was the most famous recording of all, but one of the issues that really got an awful lot of attention was, remember when Monica Lewinsky's calls with her friend, and her name's escaping me right now, but I think her friend lived in Maryland, or at least it was in a two-party consent state. I think, in fact, if memory serves me correct, she might have been prosecuted. So there are some places, you know, where depending on the purpose of the recording and the use of the recording, you know, the sanctions and the penalties can become more severe.
I suspect that when these laws were put into place, nobody predicted that, you know, cell phones would be the way they are today, and that nobody would imagine that you'd have to carry a huge recording device, right, to actually record somebody. Who imagined, other than spy stuff, little microchips,
right.
Recorders, and I guess the question really is, will that spur states to, you know, look at those laws? I suspect will happen as more of these issues come up.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of the old cassette player where you required two fingers to press down the two buttons at the
exactly
same time.
Exactly correct. You're dating yourself.
And then it would make that clunk sound, which would be a dead giveaway.
Dead giveaway. What was that sound? Exactly right.
Yeah. Exactly. No, so often technology moves ahead in leaps and bounds ahead of the law, and we're seeking to catch up. So I think you're absolutely right that as the ease of taping and covert taping becomes greater and greater, it's going to have to be addressed and wrestled with. You know, I don't know if you've ever been surreptitiously taped or listened to. I have on a couple of occasions, and just the mere knowledge that it's happened is very undermining. It's not necessarily, or it's not because we're trying to hide something. It's not to, you know, be covert, to be conspiratorial. It's just that breach of trust that goes with the knowledge that somebody came in and decided during a conversation to tape the conversation. And, you know, I think the other aspect of the whole taping issue is less legal, but more how chilling it can be for a conversation. So,
sure.
You know, and you and I were doing a presentation recently, and we had a question from one of the HR professionals in the audience who said, well, how about we address this issue by management taping these conversations? So they have a tape, we have a tape. And I think you heard me give sort of one of my shorter, blunter answers. Like, that's a lousy idea.
It's a really terrible idea, was
at
I
least
think
that
the
was,
answer.
That's just my opinion because, you know, fundamentally, you know, as a manager or an HR professional working with the employee, you don't want to send that message that neither one of us trust each other enough that we're going to have a tape recording of this conversation.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think surveillance or security has kind of changed the way people think a little bit. I mean, if you go to an airport, you go to Oh, well, if you go to City Hall in some places, right? Mm. They are not only always videotaping you, right? Everything you do, every place you go, even an airport, we know the bathrooms are videotaped. It's one of the few places we know. Everything is on tape everywhere. Now they've turned on the sound. So they're recording all the sounds that are happening in these places. There's City Halls that you walk up to City Hall and you're being recorded for everything that's said. You know, it's kind of like the TV show where they had, you know, I can't think of the name of it right now, but, you know, had everything recording on every street corner, was taping everything. And that's becoming more and more commonplace. Mm. And so, I don't know if it's a social norm that's shifting, but and there is, you know, some people will tell you Alexa and some of the other things listen and record of what you have in your house every day. Yeah. And they say they don't, but how can they not if they can hear their name? So it's kind of like a very interesting social change or thought process.
Yeah, it really is. And I think as really our privacy is eroded through all of those devices that you talk about, the employees that we deal with or the community members that we deal with have a greater belief and expectation that they have an unfettered right to record. So I've seen a shift in the paradigm so that an employee who has taped a conversation does not see anything wrong with that. And frankly, the first response that you get is, I'm allowed to. A lot of
it's my right.
It's my right. Exactly. It's my right. I live in Maine, and people, you know, are quite plugged in, and they say, it's one consent. I didn't have to tell you I was recording. You know, my response to that from an employer point of view, and, you know, I represent employers, is that there isn't an unfettered right in the workplace to do that. You can create rules in the workplace that say we don't tape each other. We're not going to tape conversations, or we're not going to tape conversations without the consent of both parties. An employer has a right to create a policy that is more rigorous in that instance than what the law provides. And employees sometimes are a bit puzzled by that initially, but there's many instances that companies, employers choose to do that. So that is one of the things I've talked to employers about is, you know, do you have a policy that addresses the tape recording of conversations in the workplace? Again, you and I were at two presentations very recently, and I asked for a show of hands. I think one hand in both groups had a policy, so it certainly was a gap that people might want to think
sure,
about.
Sure, I remember there was one gentleman, I believe, said, there will be tomorrow, right? It was one of those responses right after the conversation. I think this, you know, look, if you're not doing anything wrong, I guess the answer would be, you know, hey, there's no harm. But at the other side, to your point, from employee engagement perspective, people have to have trust that what they say is going to be a conversation, right? And what they say is going to be a verbal conversation mm-hmm. between two parties. And that can be very damaging to an organization.
It really can. And just in full disclosure to listeners out there, the law in this area has not been crystal clear. And in fact, if I was on the show last year and talked about this issue, I would have said to employers, consider a policy, but beware that our friends in Washington at the National Labor Relations Board may find such a policy to be illegal. And in fact, there was a case last year involving Whole Foods where such a policy was found to be illegal by the National Labor Relations Board. And without getting too much into the legal theory of that case, the notion was that it was unduly restrictive of protected rights of employees, whether it be in a union or non-union shop. Now, since last year to this year, the National Labor Relations Board has changed with the political winds in Washington. And we are seeing a different National Labor Relations Board. The changes take some time to evolve, but I doubt that that same position is going to be upheld by the current board when that type of challenge is faced. So my message to employers is you should be considering having a policy that addresses the taping of conversations or taping generally in the workplace, there are obviously proprietary trade secrets as well that one wants to protect if someone comes in now with a phone and starts taking photographs.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Our guest today is Peter Lowe, partner at Braun and Isaacson. And we're talking about workplace recording and hush money. Welcome, Peter.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dave.
You're really talking about a policy that covers video, audio, photographs, and I don't know any other type of recording device, right? We're not talking about just audio recording. We're talking about all types of surveillance, either way.
And one of the issues, I think, is to be realistic about is the benefit of putting a policy in place, and sometimes us lawyers fairly are accused of our solution for everything is let's write another policy. And you get this policy manual or handbook that just grows and grows and grows, and people have no clue what's in it. So I'm a realist in that way. But at least if you and I are having a conversation and I tape you and then you find out about it, well, if you don't have it in a policy that I can't do that, then there's relatively little you can do about it. You may say, well, next time, don't do it. But that sounds a little lame. Whenever you can say, you taped me, and in fact, we have a policy, and remember when you were hired, you read the handbook, and you signed the acknowledgement that you read the handbook, and that was contrary to our policies. You may not terminate the person, but you may discipline them, or you may give them a counseling. The other really practical side to this, and it's one that I've advised clients on, is they're going to have a tough conversation with an employee. It might be about a performance issue. Yeah. It might be an investigation. It might be discipline. It might be termination. And the employee, you and I right now, we've both got these iPhones right in front of us.
Yep.
And more conversations with an employee. There'll be a phone right in front of us. It's not a bad idea to say to that employee, I just want to be clear about one thing. I see you have your phone. I have my phone. It's not our policy or practice to tape any conversations, and we don't permit the taping of conversations. Are we both on the same page about that? And if the person says, no, I have every right to tape, and you're going to address that and say, well, I'm not going to move forward on that basis.
Can the employer ask the employee to show them the audio side of the phone? Not take the phone and pump it, and type in a code or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Can they say, can you bring up the audio recording part of the phone? I guess that's the phone.
I think you could, yeah. I certainly think you could. You're right.
I would ask for the passcode. That I know better.
Yeah, there's a social media law in Maine that was passed a few years ago that imposes protections for privacy for getting access to social media and passwords. But if you said to somebody, could you just, here's my phone, see, the recording is not on, could you just show me the same? You could do that. I don't know if I know of an instance yet. Some people will say, well, you can have this policy and you can have that conversation, all well and good, but they still may record. And I say, yes, they may. That may be happening. There may be a device in someone's pocket. I know there has been in other instances. But the reality then is, if someone is taping something and they're planning to use it and use it against you, unemployment, Maine Human Rights Commission, civil action, wrongful discharge, and they let's go to the tape. If they have taped something when they've explicitly said they weren't, that's lying. I mean, mm-hmm. So it really does blunt somewhat
the character.
The utility of the recording. So in any event, those are some strategies and some thoughts, because there's no question about it in my mind that the attention that's being paid to these high profile, we mentioned the Omarosa issue, evidently she had 200 recordings of conversations, not only her conversation of termination, but just conversations throughout her stint in the White House. And we don't really know the motive for doing that, but she has a treasure trove of information. And that's going to lead others to be copycats. There's
no
question in my mind. They won't all be high-profile ones. They're not all going to be working in the White House. And so you and I are going to see it more for the people we work with who are going to, face the issue that someone leaves and they're disgruntled. Let's face it, that's going to happen. And they're going to have recordings, and we're going to worry about how those recordings might be used. There's, whole slew of privacy issues, other employees having, their voices and recordings also used and exposed. So,
yeah, it's interesting, if somebody goes in and they take their phone and they videotape someone, mm-hmm. and maybe they videotape a young woman or they videotape a young man and they use that in an inappropriate way.
Yeah.
It's certainly treated different than someone recording a conversation which may have somebody's livelihood on the line.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so you almost could say it's the same level of hype, but it isn't treated the same level, is it?
No, it's not. Brings to mind one of the interesting issues we face with our client base. We represent, in addition to companies, school districts, and the taping of teachers in particular has been a really challenging issue. Students bringing in their phones and then taping teachers, and you get into their employee rights. I'm not disclosing anything that's not being made public. We've been involved, our firm, on behalf of a school district. I think it's probably in its sixth year of litigation involving a student and the student's parents seeking a recording device on their student each day. And the student is a student with disabilities and very complex First Amendment, ADA, issues that have worked their way through the federal courts right up to the First Circuit Court of Appeals. And ultimately, at each instance, the court system and a jury in one instance have said that the recording, they did not support the application of a recording device. That's a case actually that's got national prominence. And it's a taste of what's to come again, because you're balancing and battling on the one side, a belief that there's a right to record, And we talked about that earlier.
Yeah,
then on the other hand, in the school district's position would be that's not conducive to a productive, healthy educational environment.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you watch the news, if you watch, you know, anything that is controversial, it's or it's caused riots, is a videotape of something, right? You look at some of the beatings that happened down in the South, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a tape that appears to show something, yet when the real due diligence is done behind the scene, it is not as it appears. And so, but they did the taping. And what was it? Just recently I saw an officer was trying to subdue a suspect and asking for help from a security guard. And the security guard was just taping it rather than helping. Mm. Of course, they got fired because they didn't do that. But it's become almost like, hey, we're just going to record everything.
Yeah, and you know, the ability of the public to record what they're witnessing has faced legal challenges. And again, somewhat of a generalization, but there's a growing body of law that recognizes a constitutional right, First Amendment right, to make those recordings. And that's the argument that people are now seeking to apply, not in the public domain, but within
the workplace.
Within the workplace or within a school, which is obviously quasi-public domain with some differences from being right out in the street. So it's an area we're just going to see more and more.
Yeah, I mean, I think employers always talk about, you know, it's private property. I have the right to, as an employer, you know, that is being challenged a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Hi, this is Derek Volk, host of The Derek Volk Show. I want to tell you about my book, Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. My book is a rare and emotionally truthful story of my experiences as a father raising a son on the autism spectrum. When Dylan was 2 years old, my wife sat me down and said, "Something's not quite right with Dylan." My book takes you from birth to that day at age 2 until he was diagnosed with autism 6 years later, and then through his extremely rocky middle school years, his volatile high school life, and his challenging path to adulthood. The story has been called extremely raw and shockingly honest, and has been given 5 stars by every review on Amazon. Please go to our website, chasingtherabbit.org, to learn more about our story. That's chasingtherabbit.org.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Peter Lowe. He's a partner and employment attorney with Brown & Isaacson. We're talking about workplace recording and other HR topics. And Peter, you know, I think you were at an event that we all were at, and you made a comment about people taking a field trip in the HR community, or even business leaders and owners taking a field trip. What did you mean by field trip? And look, I'll take many field trips, but what exactly say, wait, let's go on a field trip. Where are we going?
Well, actually, if here in Maine and in other states, you can take field trips, your own government agency too. It's a really exciting one. It's one to the Senator Inn in Augusta. Now, I don't have a stake in the Senator Inn. I'm not trying to plug it as a vacation destination, but it happens to be where the Maine Human Rights Commission holds their regular meetings, either monthly or bimonthly, and they are public. And for anybody who's not been to a Maine Human Rights Commission hearing and you're in HR, I highly recommend it. Ideally, go there without your own case, because that's always a little bit more nerve-wracking when you're on the line. Look at the agenda online and go for a morning session, and you probably will hear three or four or five employment cases, and you will sit there, and you will definitely learn, and you will go back to your company or your organization, and you will look at things just a little bit differently, because you get to see, could be a sexual harassment case, it could be a disability discrimination case, it could be a religious accommodation case. And before the commission, the two parties who are to a case get 10 minutes each. I get 10 minutes to argue and make your case. And then the commissioners can ask questions, and then you can listen to them deliberate. But you get a sense of what really counts and what really matters. And you also see the type of scrutiny that a decision you may make or that you may help shape with management can come under when there is a challenge. And so I've gone there many, many times, and I've gone with many clients, some who've been there before and others who are first timers. And every time they come away and they say, because typically I say, stay for the other cases. And you know, if our case is listed fourth or fifth on the agenda, you'll hear the other cases first. And it's just an eye-opening. I think I said the other night, they'll learn way more than listening to me or you for half an hour.
Because that's real happening, right?
Oh, it really is. It's an excellent outing for an HR professional or management. And you just see not only how the system works, but you know, the case before the one I argued the other day was a religious accommodation case. And as you're listening to it, you start to sit there and think, I might have done that differently. Or I see where, you know, the flaw is in the employer's case in that instance. And one of the things, and you've heard me say this before, but my advice to clients is, if you find yourself in a position where you have to defend a decision you've taken, let's use termination by way of example, you want to... Your advocate, your lawyer in this instance, to be able to stand up and look those five commissioners in the eye and take the high ground. And it's always a really valuable lens to apply to any situation. Can I defend this? Can I defend this from a position of strength? Can I stand up and say, unfortunately, we terminated the person for being impaired at work? Yes, he says he has a disability, but you know, we were most concerned about safety. Safety comes first. We've had other instances where we've had bad act. You know, can we take that position? And if we can, that's where you want your advocate to stand up and make a force. So you get a sense too of sort of the bigger picture from going there. Anyway,
it's just the same thing whether you're in New Hampshire. New Hampshire has obviously Commission for Human Rights. Massachusetts has it. This would be a good outing for any, you know, business owner or business leader. I'd also recommend it. Hey, if you're in school, you're going to, you know, taking HR as a business person or taking business courses, you should go up and learn now. Don't learn the hard way after the fact, right? Go up and learn that. So I think that's the case. A lot of lessons to be learned from
A lot of lessons to be learned. One other sort of small thing is I always, always, always require my client to come with me. Who's got a case. They're not testifying. They're not witnesses. They don't have to enter an appearance, but it's a very strong signal that they are there. They're taking it seriously. I introduce them to the commissioners. And frankly, that is not the norm. And often you see the lawyer stand up and, you know, is the hired gun, and the employer is conspicuous by their absence. I think that's not the best message to be sending to a commission. So,
does usually the accused come to these?
Well, no. I mean, if it's a harassment case, for example, the person who is being accused of the harassment most likely is not there. Now, if the person who has brought the case, let's say, is a former employee who makes a claim that he resigned because of the harassment or was terminated in retaliation for reporting harassment, they will be there. And sometimes the lawyer for the employee gives them a few minutes to speak. And as the lawyer on the other side, you're always hoping that they're not going to be super sympathetic. And there's never a norm on that. Sometimes people are terrific advocates for themselves.
Sure.
Sometimes they're not.
Right.
But,
right.
It's where so much of what we do as lawyers and HR professionals plays out, and you see, you know, where these tricky cases can end up.
Well, the reality is it's part fact and part feel.
Yes.
Right? I mean, there is an element of feel to everything we do because we're human, hence human.
Yeah, you can't scrub it of emotions and feelings,
right.
And those play out. And sympathies and empathy are a part of the whole system.
Yeah. Well, the next thing I wanted to talk about is a little bit having to do with on the harassment issue side. And this has to do with severance agreements because, as we all know, it has happened many times, and certainly in the national news there's a lot of talk about this, but if we talk about even locally, companies or organizations sometimes have agreements to make things go away. For lack of a legal better term, hey, let's just make this go away. And they pay out a sum of money, they pay out a whatever it is to a employee or former employee to make it go away. Those have come into fire lately.
They have, and you know, any time that you have a claim or a threatened claim with an employee and you want to buy your piece and you want to resolve it, and it may be, and in some instances it could be a frivolous complaint, but the time and the expense and the distraction of dealing with a claim, a lawsuit or a complaint is considerable. So some employers choose, even in a frivolous case, to get it resolved. And of course, you know, I'm a realist. There are, of course, claims that are valid or have close call claims where they could go either way. And an employer may say, I want to resolve this. Economically, for the interests of all parties, let's reach an agreement. Almost every agreement of that nature where you're paying money or giving something of value, in return, you're going to get a full release of any claims. In addition, it's absolutely standard fare to say both sides are going to keep this confidential. That has now been dubbed, and we're seeing it throughout the national media, as a hush agreement.
Right.
And immediately, instead of calling it a severance agreement or a settlement agreement or a separation agreement, you call it a hush agreement. It has implications.
Yeah,
that
different connotations.
Totally different implications. And so there's been some extremely high-profile examples of these agreements, which have, you know, incredible degree of confidentiality teeth to them, that have been leaked and become public. And, you know, just very recently, it got some attention. One of the women who brought the complaint against Harvey Weinstein, it became public that she herself had reached a settlement with a male with whom allegedly she'd had sex. And the settlement agreement that she negotiated with that complainant, I think, was for $380,000. Of course, it was never intended to become public, but what we're seeing is those agreements are being revealed. Somebody's sending them to the press, and the press, they're not bound by the fact that
not.
It says it's confidential. This is news. I mean, we, of course, are in the midst of, you know, a massive degree of investigation into the agreements that were reached and negotiated by Michael Cohen. You know, the Stormy Daniels agreement, there's confidentiality provisions in it. It's Karen McDougal, confidentiality provisions. But why I raise that as well is so it goes back to the taping issue, where you get so much focus on a particular event in the public eye and the copycat element. I think the same is going to happen with regard to these agreements. Two elements to that. One, I see greater risk and potential that, despite the language saying this is strictly confidential, that somehow the agreement is going to be leaked. And if it's a case that has the potential to attract publicity and media attention, then there's a greater risk of that. And let's face it, in the time of Me Too, almost any case here in Maine that involves allegations of sexual harassment against any individual or entity that has a profile, it could attract publicity.
Sure.
So number one, as a lawyer representing employers in this field, I am increasingly saying to them, yes, we will seek to negotiate confidentiality because it's a smart, prudent thing to do. Number one, understand that someone can later leak that agreement. And if they do leak it, there's probably little that you can do about it unless you can prove it was the complainant. And secondly, the confidentiality that you thought you guaranteed could be lost, and you are going to be conveyed as somebody who paid somebody off to hush them up. So, you know, that's...
Yeah, that's... I mean, it really changes the dynamic, doesn't it?
It does.
In terms of what it is. Now, if somebody was paid $100,000 for this agreement, can the employer then say, I want the $100,000 back plus damages?
Yeah, so you can put a provision in your agreement that says, if you breach the confidentiality, then the consideration, namely the severance or the $100,000, must be returned. Number one, you would need to prove that breach, which may be very difficult. And number two, you would then be bringing a claim against that person, and you're just getting wading into the dispute and litigation that you want to avoid. The Michael Cohen agreements, I've seen frequently referenced to a $1 million penalty associated with those. But whether that's really going to happen or whether that's going to be upheld is a different matter. The other thing that we are seeing is that state legislatures are looking at these agreements, and there have been some bills introduced, and I believe in California there may even be some legislation now, where they are considering prohibiting confidentiality agreements in settlements of sexual harassment allegations.
Isn't that ironic, where if there have been some of these for government officials, right?
Yeah.
Senators and congressmen and local officials, it's kind of ironic. They're almost hurting themselves.
Yeah,
in some
and
cases.
And ultimately, if you, I understand where that comes from. Of course, in the notion that if you have wealth and power, you can buy people off, and I think many people don't like that fact.
Okay.
A certain well-known TV talk show person paid $32 million to one employee
because he can.
Because he had the ability to do so. And had incredibly onerous confidentiality, but that agreement also became public. But where it's troubling for me is that often in these cases, a resolution, a settlement, is clearly in the best interests of both parties. Going through a trial is a punishing process for all involved. So if you create a disincentive to resolve matters, I'm not sure that, in fact, in the end, it's going to be
benefit. The win-win is gone at that point.
Yeah.
The win-win's gone. And it actually encourages people just to say, well, then I'll just fight it at this point because it's going to take 5, 6, 7
right.
years and gets off, it is what it is at that point,
The other thing that I've talked about in this area is we've seen a few examples right here in Maine recently where an allegation against an individual or a company of harassment can arise based on conduct. The one I'm thinking of occurred 8 years prior to it becoming public. And the former employee did a blog post, which was then picked up by the Portland Press Herald. And within weeks, the individual was disassociated with his company. The fallout was considerable. I'm not passing judgment on the merits of that particular case. I don't know. I wasn't involved. I've learned enough not to judge from the outside. But one thing I'm seeing is that investigation, due process, deliberation can just fly out of the window because once the media gets the story, the fire is so all-consuming, there's very little you can do if you're accused.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm not here to defend Matt Lauer. I don't know exactly what Matt Lauer did, but what I really remember very clearly was within less than 36 hours from the allegations surfacing, he was fired. And you and I know that you can't investigate an issue of that complexity within that time.
Right.
But, you know, NBC made, you know, in part a political, strategic public relations decision that he had to go, and maybe that was right. But our notions that we've educated our employers on, you have a complaint, you do an investigation, you exercise your due diligence, you make credibility determinations, you gather all the facts before you reach any conclusions.
Throw them right out the window, Peter.
Almost seems quaint.
Yeah,
yeah,
it does. It does. It's almost really does. Like any type of accusation, and I've had people say that to me, you know, you can get buried in a complaint that has no merit and can take somebody out.
And what I've cautioned employers about is because you've seen that play out, I'll again use Matt Lauer example, don't believe that that's the way you've got to respond.
Right.
Because if you get it badly wrong, and in fact that person is completely innocent, these are malicious charges, and those things happen.
Yes, they do.
We've dealt with them.
Yes, we've dealt with them.
And you have them terminated, and it becomes known that it's for harassment, then they're going to turn around and they're going to have a pretty strong defamation suit against you, that you've labeled them as a predator, as a harasser. And, you know, for them to be able to clean up that reputation may be extremely difficult. So, you know, our pendulum does swing back and forth.
It does, and I do think we're seeing that. But right now there's certainly a hypersensitivity to the issue at this time.
Oh, absolutely.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we're talking with the great Peter Rowe, employment attorney partner at Brown & Isaacson. We're talking about workplace recording and hush money. We've had a great conversation about those. So hush, young man. Anyways.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard great just before Peter Lowe. Could you repeat that? At least, Deb, don't cut that out when you edit the show, okay?
Deb, we have to talk about that, okay?
I promise I won't.
Okay. As we wrap up the show here in the last segment, there's a lot going on in regards to cannabis or marijuana here in the state of Maine and the recreational use of it. We have only a couple minutes left. Could you give us a quick update on what's going on in that area?
Yes. So finally, the legislation passed and the veto was overridden by the governor. And so we do have a recreational marijuana law on the books. It's a long, sprawling statute with a very discreet, small part that gives us some guidance on the workplace. The most significant thing I think the employers out there need to understand on our recreational marijuana law is, one, it is different from the medical marijuana statute that we have, which creates some complexities. Two, what's not in it is significant. The earlier version, the one that passed with the referendum, in essence, created marijuana use, recreational marijuana use, as a potential protected class. It was stated in the law essentially that an employer could not refuse to hire an employee solely because of their off-duty recreational marijuana use. The legislature loves writing statutes that provide great fodder for lawyers. What I mean by that is the new statute is far from clear. There is a provision in there that says an employer may have a workplace policy that addresses the use of recreational marijuana by an employee. I paraphrase that. The question that it begs is, can an employer have a policy that says we will not allow our employees to use marijuana. And if they drug test and they drug test positively for marijuana, we can take necessary action, including termination. That's a question that's going to be tested out in the courts. My sort of high-level advice on this issue, keep it simple, is you're not going to allow any possession of marijuana, recreational marijuana. You're not going to allow any use of recreational marijuana. You're going to discipline somebody, or you can if they're impaired by marijuana. And you should be addressing safety-sensitive positions. That latter statement is one that, you know, is time is too scarce to really address it in depth. But this is a complex issue. And one, if you're an employer and you're addressing, you should be seeking advice in this area. It's not a simple one right now. The law is going to evolve. We will get more guidance. But so stay tuned on this one.
No, it's great. And Peter, I want to thank you so much for taking the time today to come in and share with us these very interesting updates that are going on here in the state and nationally. It's great stuff.
Thank you. A pleasure to be on, as always.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez with Veral Dana. Last week, we began with a few tips on how to appropriately respond to an OSHA audit. This week, we will provide you with a few more. After verifying the identity of the inspector, ensure that the individual inspector is wearing appropriate safety gear for your establishment during the course of the audit. Next, make sure that records that may be needed by the inspector are easily accessible. Best practices, as far as document retention, can come in handy during any audit, whether Department of Transportation, Department of Labor, or OSHA. But make sure that the inspector is comfortable, but not too comfortable. Provide him or her with a room or area to perform the audit and interview employees if necessary. Finally, correct safety hazards that are pointed out by the inspection. You do not have to wait until an official citation to correct these hazards. And correcting hazards not formally cited does not imply guilt, but instead enhances employee safety. Contact a member of Veral Dana's Labor and Employment Practice Group if you'd like to discuss more.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Denise Dumont-Bernier, Executive Director, Occupational Medical Consulting, or OMC Wellness Works, discusses changing culture through well-being. There is a resurgence in companies' interest in wellness, but not the old wellness of the past. Today's wellness programs need to be strategic, long-term, sustainable structures with goals and metrics that are data-driven and show an ROI on the business. Listen to Denise and your host, David Chulo, discuss the future of wellness, which is hands-on, personal approach that supports individuals with behavioral and lifestyle change. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.